Russians depend heavily on extractive resources, Markowitz explained. They view the Arctic, quote, as their strategic future resource base. According to Yu Sun, a senior fellow at the Stimson Center in Washington, D.C., Chinese expansion into the Arctic follows a similar resource-focused strategy, not a territorial one. Beyond its investments in Russian oil and gas ventures, she said, China is specifically interested in gaining access to new sea lanes that could reduce transit times between Asian ports and European markets by as much as 2 weeks. Last January, the Chinese government published a white paper that outlined its northern intentions. In it, China described itself as a near-Arctic state that hoped to collaborate with other nations to build a Polar Silk Road dedicated to commerce and research. It's something to watch carefully, Sun said. I will give you the literal translation of what the Chinese said to me. We know that we don't have claims in the Arctic, but if there's anything in the Arctic that we can get, we don't want to be left out. During my travels along the new frontier, Cold War analogies always fell flat. Easier to grasp was the Arctic's overall absence from the North American mind. Over decades, the U.S. and Canada had never bothered to develop their northern territories or invest in their people. Even Pompeo's speech, with language of opportunity in marketplaces, felt more like a warning than a plan, the protest of a player arriving late to the game. This attitude is often insulting and even painful to the Arctic's indigenous people, especially because such promises of opportunity have nearly always excluded them. Joe Savikatuk, the premier of Canadian's Nunavut territory, echoed Marvin Akituk when he told me that the Inuit had been left out of plans for the new Arctic. Quote, we're happy and proud to be part of Canada, he said, but we feel like the poor brother that gets the scraps.